This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. As we say hi midweek, Wednesday, I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles, the dangerous duo. So here's what we can hope for. Somebody got Amal Shaw, a Kit Kat, a Milky Way, a $1,000 grand, a candy bar. Yesterday, he stayed awake for all 3 hours, alert at the end of the show, so hopefully he got some chocolate. The big guy, Dustin Sweetelson, struggling today, a musky stench permeating the studios there at the South Point, and no internet. Shake yourself, big guy. Pull yourself together, all right? You're going to be fine. How we doing, fellas?
Doing well. Not quite as well as the Los Angeles Dodgers, but I'll tell you what, we've got a full-on sauna going in here, Patrick. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't generally complain about the heat. We are somewhere probably between 94 and 96 degrees in this studio right now.
I know I complain a lot, so it's hard to take it serious when I do.
That's facts.
But, like, if I hadn't just shaved my chest, I would go shirtless. But I look like a 12-year-old, maybe girl, actually.
Hey, Wander Franco, calm down, okay?
Well, the issue that I think most listeners and viewers would have is generally Amal is complaining about it being cold.
Yeah. Correct.
Now
correct.
You both are complaining about it being hot, so no. We can't find a happy medium. That's the issue, boys.
For the record, I'm not complaining. I just wanted to lodge that on Dustin's behalf so he wouldn't get stuck with it.
But so Patrick's the wrong person to talk about this with. So Amal, what do you keep your thermostat hat in your house?
During the day?
When you're there.
When I'm there, about 72, 73.
I keep it at about 68, 69. Patrick, what do you keep your thermostat at?
74, 75, if I had a choice. I like it toasty. I don't know why that is. I do like it. When you talk about thermostat temp, it's a very personal conversation. people get really sensitive when having that conversation. But I generally like to keep it toasty and live it in the desert, as you two do. Speaking of the desert, we're going to go over UNLV and Odom today. We've got a theme, and our theme today for our four college programs, coaches that took a step back. We're going to go Georgia Southern, UNLV, FAU, and Tulsa. So we will talk about UNLV. I want you guys to think about this as well. Like, what should the expectations be for UNLV football and basketball? Because I do want to have that greater conversation. Also, a little birdie told me before the show started, it's a big day for the two of you. I take a glance at the awards market over at DraftKings. You take a look at the NL Cy Young right now. Gallen plus 175. Blake Snell 3-1. Here comes Snell. He's sub 3 as far as his ERA, and they got a huge matchup in San Diego tonight. Kramer and Snell, Baltimore, San Diego. Snell, a big favorite over at DraftKings, $1.85. But I believe you two can fill me in. I believe you two have Snell in the futures market as far as the Cy Young.
Yeah, Dustin got him at 40-1. I got him at 35-1. We were just kind of talking, and at that point in time, Snell had 6 or 7 straight starts of, you know, just dominant performances, Patrick. I think he had given up 2 earned runs over that 7-game stretch and continued to pitch extremely well. But it's also been a benefit of the fact that guys like Strider and other pitchers have kind of dropped off a little bit, Spencer Strider being the biggest one. And Dustin kind of researched it, and you looked at guys who had ERAs over 3, and I think there were only a couple of guys you came up with over 30 years, Dustin.
Yeah, and most of them that won with an ERA over 3 that won a Cy Young Award, everyone else that was an option that year also that got votes also had an ERA in the 3s, except for maybe 1 or 2 where they just had dominant, where Clemens won like 20 games and had an ERA over 3. And then there might've been one other person, but it was very rare that someone with a 3 ERA won the Cy Young Award without someone being sub 3 as an option.
So he's definitely sub 3. The wins aren't there, but that doesn't matter anymore.
Strikeouts are there.
So strikeouts are there. He started off, what's weird about Snell, and correct me if I'm wrong, boys, because you're more up on this, but he started off slowly this year.
Yes, he did.
And then he's been a bit of a roller coaster, but really good for a disappointing team. Where is he right now? Close to 2.5?
Well, yeah, and he's the wrong guy that you want to have a ticket on at this point because he walks a lot of batters, Patrick. Every game, there's 2 on, 2 out, and you're just praying a bloop doesn't fall in to mess with the ERA. He is constantly putting people on base, working himself into and out of jams. So far, he's been good, but I have a lot of concerns tonight because the Orioles are just a powerful offense.
This is a big opportunity for him. The Padres, by the way, they look like they're already 1-2-3 Cancun.
I mean, schedule. Schedule, big time schedule leaks coming up.
Hey, hold
soft
on
schedule. If they call it Charmin on the back animal.
If we get to the Houston, Texas scenario, the Rangers have the 14th hardest schedule. The Houston Astros have the 27th hardest schedule remaining. So I just want to point that out. I got to defend myself a little bit. And I have mentioned the Padres schedule all year long. It doesn't make a difference when you've got a AAA team. Xander Bogaerts can't hit. It seems like nobody was disappointed when Fernando Tatis got deked by Julio Rodriguez on the home run. I just think this team is in complete disarray.
The Dodgers started tearing it down, and I know you have a great August stat for us. The Dodgers started tearing it down. They lost their shortstop before the season started. Everybody we brought on, and I'm not naming names, but every Major League Baseball prognosticator we brought on this dumb show came on and said the Padres are lit this year. The Padres are not only going to win the NL pennant, they're going to win the West, and they're doing pretty well. They're 16 behind the Dodgers, who, as I said, stripped it, lost their shortstop. Everybody expected the Dodgers to fall back this year. If you sleep on the Dodgers in the regular season, do at your own peril. They're 72-46 if you need them. How about San Diego? Promising year. They are 57-63. That is, and remember, I came back from vacation and I said, I've got four teams, two positive, two negatives. I'm going to go ahead and replace the Yankees. The Yankees are just basic. They're mid. They're terrible. We understand that they're not going to make the postseason, but I'm going to replace them at this point with the San Diego Padres as far as biggest disappointment. I mean, this is a disaster right now. What they did in the offseason and what the expectations were and what the performance equals is there's some cognitive dissonance there.
But Patrick, while you were gone, you didn't get to see the panic Amal and I had because of everything you said, the Padres being a disaster. We were terrified our tickets were going to die because he was going to get traded to the American League.
That's valid.
By the way, Congressman Maher, I know that was a direct shot at me, and you're not wrong in
no,
that.
No,
hold on. I'm going to defend myself here because the season's not over, even though they're six games below 500 with 42 games remaining. I thought the Dodgers would win the division. I thought the Padres would come out of the National League to get to the World Series. So I'm not officially eliminated there yet, but you're absolutely right. I think a lot of people, myself included, thought this Padres team would have a great year. Musgrove and Snell have pitched very, very well since June, but the problem has been the offense. Xander Bogaerts got off to a fast start. Juan Soto has not really performed well, even though he's had a better second half of the season. He hasn't been great. Manny Machado, to me, is a player that could potentially carry a team for a couple of weeks at a time. Hasn't overwhelmed in any positive way. There's a lot of big bloated contracts on this team. Jake Cronenworth has been terrible. A lot of guys who haven't delivered on this team.
Yeah, and I promise it wasn't a shot. Because
no.
I don't think he'd carry. He's a teammate at DraftKings, but Carrabba's came on, who's a big baseball guy, respected. He came on. He loved the Padres. We had guest after guest, and there was no reason, by the way, there's no reason for Amal, Carrabba's, or whoever not to like the Padres. I'm sure I was jocking the Padres as well. They're absolutely loaded. The manager, they've just completely disappointed this year. And it's fascinating that we're talking baseball on an August 16th to start, because America's past time is just that in today's day, because everybody looks past baseball at this point and just looks to football, right? I mean, it's just like the idea that we're talking about it is because there's bets to win. Good job by you last night with the Astros coming back. That fish team, the Marlins, would not go away, but the big guy gave me the Astros, which I do appreciate. But there's bets, there's money to be won, and there's awards still yet to be decided here.
Yeah, I gotta tell you though, since the trade deadline, it was a rough June and July for, I know, a lot of people, myself included. Since the trade deadline, it's been really hard to pick the winners. I swore Houston was going to win the last two games against Miami. They lost both. Guess what I'm doing today? I'm betting Houston again. If they get swept by the Marlins, I might stop betting baseball for the rest of the season.
Bad boy.
By the way, speaking of good bets to make, the Los Angeles Dodgers in August, guys. 56-13, 13-1 this month. In 2021, they were 21-6. In 22, they were 22-6. And so far this year, 13-1, as I alluded to. An 81 win percentage. By the way, if you kind of played that out over 162 games, they'd win 130 games.
Is that good?
Yeah,
I think it's good.
Yeah.
It's good. And you take a look. Let's look at the market just for the World Series here. So the Braves are plus 330, obviously your favorites. The Dodgers are 4.25, plus 425. about the Rangers and Astros both tied at 7.5-1 in the same division, and then the Rays 9-1. It's just 2 minutes left in the segment. The Wander Franco conversation needs to be had. I have no clue what's happening off the field. I just know it looks like he's not going to be playing. That is the cog. That's their best player. That's a big issue for a Rays team that started as hot as any team we've seen in a long time.
And McClanahan is going to have Tommy John surgery.
Dunzo.
Yeah, he's done. And for people that aren't aware of the Wander Franco situation right now, the team has put him on the non-baseball injury list, and he won't be paid, generally speaking, during that time. There's accusations that he had a relationship with a minor. So he's got bigger problems than worrying about the Baltimore Orioles at this point in time. But when you look in the American League, guys, there is an argument to be made for the Orioles at 10-1. There's an argument to be made for a bunch of teams. I get the Braves and Dodgers right now seem to be the head of the class in baseball, especially in the National League. But couldn't we make the argument? Even the Twinkies are slowly starting to play decent baseball. Nobody's talking. I don't think we've talked about the American League Central before this until the season started.
And there's been for good reason. Yeah, the Twinkies, sure, yeah, as you mentioned, have kind of crept up. They're 19-1. The Phillies are 17-1. You see that chasm, as you mentioned, after Baltimore. Baltimore's creeped up to 9-1. They're tied with the Rays. But after that six-team stretch, the Braves, the Dodgers, the Rangers, the Astros, the Rays, and Orioles, you do see that chasm, big guy. So you get then to the Phillies at 17-1.
Yeah, I can't quit the Rangers at 9-1 still. I think I have them about 850. Also, the Blue Jays, I still think they set up well for the postseason. I know there's concerns about pitching. And I did take a flyer this week on the Mariners at 33-1. If they could squeeze into the postseason, I think they have the right blend of players. They have enough young arms. They could be an interesting team to mess up a higher seed in the playoffs.
I love his Mariners call. This team is very much alive, a game behind the Blue Jays right there in the wild card. They're dangerous.
Yeah, they've just been kind of lying in the weeds all year. That's what's great about 162, fellas. All right, Ralph Russo, Associated Press College Football, Jason Moore, Fantasy Footballers, Brock Vereen, Big Ten Network, and Scott Spritzer. We're just getting started. Sharp Money, it's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
How about this? This is damn cool. Billy Walters. It's Walters Tuesday. Legendary sports bettor Billy Walters sat down with Brent Musburger for an exclusive interview. Two goats, frankly. And the only place to see it is VSiN. Billy reveals his systems for betting the NFL, shares some unbelievable betting stories, and gives details on Phil Mickelson's gambling, including trying to bet on an event he was playing in. You've heard about it. Check out the interview Tuesday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, only on VSiN. That's coming up next Tuesday, August 22nd. Looking forward to that. Look, that is the man that this network was built off of is Brent Musburger, and he's a GOAT. Nobody better at what he did. And Billy Walters, the separation between Walters and the rest of the sports bettors is Messi-like. You saw Messi had another goal last night for Inter, a 33-mile-an-hour shot. Blake had no opportunity. People want to blame it on the goaltending. How about the fact that this is just a dude that does his craft better than anybody's done it, and it's the world sport? And then Billy Walters, the world sport's also betting. Go to Europe. It's not even taboo. They just bet. Billy Walters better than anybody at what he does and more feared by bookmakers. And bookmakers are a fearful group and an insecure group. And Billy Walters certainly shook them, no doubt. Check out the interview coming up next Tuesday. Looking forward to that. You know, you guys were talking during the break. I'm Al Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. Got a big show. It's kind of I like these type of shows. It's a slow news day. Not a lot happening. I do want to get to a Ravens injury, and I have thoughts on the Ravens coming up and their win total. But I do like these kind of more relaxed days. And you guys were having the conversation about, we'll get off the baseball, but fixing baseball. What is this, like, algorithmically conditioned mind that we have now and our lack of attention? Because, Amal, you said you'd fix the sport in certain ways. We talked about baseball being America's pastime, and now it's apropos because once football starts, we get past baseball and nobody pays attention anymore. But you two were coming up with ideas. The pitch clock has been a revelation. Yep. Everybody would agree the games are brisk. It's exciting. There's a new vibe. When you're watching a game, you can't go grab something from the refrigerator between pitches. You're going to miss something. There's an immediacy that matters. But Amal, you were saying you'd do a couple things to fix the game. And also, I think, what does it say on a macro level just about us? Because as kids, the three of us loved the game of baseball, wouldn't have changed anything. Right. Now we call 162, we call it a slog.
Well, absolutely. You know, Patrick, you're right about that. Wouldn't have changed anything a long time ago. But you look at the marketplace today. You've got college football has really ascended in the last decade or so, college basketball as well. You've got so many other competitive sports, other ancillary things that are out there that are options for people. And to me, if they ended the season around Labor Day weekend, and when you get into the postseason, we all love October baseball. But I think if you're playing at a time where it's not freezing temperatures in the Northeast, it would make the game a little bit more intriguing. Just from my perspective, I think it would be a little bit better. The other thing that I would do is in a lot of these markets like Cleveland, Cincinnati, where you don't get a lot of midweek attendance, I would drastically drop the ticket prices on some of the upper deck seats and other things like that. I just want people in the stadium, create an atmosphere that encourages other people to come. I don't know. I just feel like the sport is kind of, it feels like it's on its last legs.
And Big Guy, you were saying during the break, like I said, there is not a sport on the planet that I'd rather go to in person than baseball. Sit out. It's more meditative. Kind of be out in nature. If it's outside Dodger Stadium, you got the mountains in the background. You have a cold beer. Maybe you talk to your friends in between pitches. There's something to it. Would you change anything?
Well, I just think it's interesting that Rob Manfred finally made some changes that we all like this year. And I'm curious because he's a guy who hasn't had a lot of wins as a commissioner. I mean, he's had wins for the owners, but not really wins for baseball fans and the players. So I wonder, coming off a year where the pitch clock is successful and some of the other things they implemented with the schedule changes, they've gone pretty well. Is he just going to sit back, relax and say, well, I fixed things last year? Or is he going to look to make more changes to make the game more innovative, more fun, more open to more people? Look, the NFL every single year has new rule changes that we adjust for. They do not stop evolving. Baseball stopped evolving, and I think that's part of why they lost a big fraction of the country in terms of fans. I think it's a really big offseason for Manfred to see what he does during his reign as commissioner.
Right. I just talked about Billy Walters and Brent Musburger. Rob Manfred should not be in the same segment because Rob Manfred was crawling around on all fours and he found a nut. Okay, just a squirrel trying to find a nut. He had backed into so many issues of the commissioner. And I'm not, dude, the guy's a lawyer, smart guy, weird dude, not supposed to be commissioner, just a horrific run. This, the pitch clock, has been on the table forever. He waited forever to install it, finally got it in, crawled around, found that nut, and here's Manfred getting all the praise. He's not going to do anything right. The guy is just incapable. He's incompetent. He bumbles and stumbles all over himself. Now, again, whether or not he makes changes, this change, the pitch clock, he has to get credit for. And it really has, like, the rapidity of these games, like the idea that you can get involved in a game and not, it's just not one of those things that drags, has been a benefit. I'll give him credit there, but it's not necessarily Rob Manfred.
No, I would agree with
we
you.
Used to pick on him on a radio show, so I hate to bring it back up, but that's just where it is.
I don't disagree with you, but you know, you look at last night Dodgers game. They played against the Brewers, 6-2 final score. Dodgers, I think, had a 5 spot in the sixth inning. Game was played in 2 hours in a short time. I forgot the exact amount of time, but it was like, man, this is perfect. Especially, you know, Patrick, you live in Los Angeles. Dustin and I both have lived there previously. You're going back from Dodger Stadium, regardless of where you live. You've got a decent commute just with traffic. These are types of things that you want that are expedited. We see in a lot of cities now, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Miami, even the Diamondbacks always play the 6:40 local time start. Teams are playing in an earlier start time so people could attend and be able to leave the game at a certain amount of time.
Okay, let me just transition here. What are your expectations, or what should the expectations be for UNLV football? I'll leave basketball. The days of Tark, those are over. But let's just talk about football, because when we talk about UNLV, and you guys are in Las Vegas, I lived in Las Vegas for 3 years, so we can speak on this. But when people talk about Las Vegas and they talk about UNLV athletics, they say, well, they got the city, they've got the weather, they've got the campus, they've got the facilities, which makes me pause and say, really? Odom is getting a good gig here. You know, he was running the defense at Arkansas after coaching for years at Missouri. This is a good hire for UNLV. Arroyo had done a good job. His program had started to progress. I think there was some inner strife. Amal, you may be able to touch on this with Arroyo. After year three, he was let go. 5-7 last year, started 4-1, fell apart late. A lot of that had to do with Arroyo getting fired. And frankly, they got an upgrade at head coach in Odom. So we can talk about the coach. We can talk about the program. But let's start with the macro picture, UNLV. The city itself plays to degenerates that fly in with their boys that are in their mid-40s. It's not for kids that are underage trying to get a fake ID hitting the strip. The idea of the strip in Las Vegas, it's not really what it's positioned as if you're living in Michigan and watching on television. Las Vegas is about Henderson. It's about Summerlin. It's about the suburbs. Like, and then you talk about the campus, downtown, UNLV. It's not necessarily a hub of electricity. It's spaced out. You kids drive all around the campus. It's not necessarily the most walkable. It's not aesthetically pleasing. Like, should we be judging UNLV as the strip when we're talking about athletics?
No, you're correct on that. I like your breakdown of it, but I just don't think this program, basketball is easy to elevate because all you need is two or three players. Football, obviously you need a lot more to be successful, and they have not had a history of being successful. They've even hired guys like John Robinson in the past in the early 2000s, came in here. Obviously he had great success at USC. I just think this is a difficult program. It's a commuter school. You've got to really be able to recruit the West Coast well and convince people to come here. If you can do that, you can get to being a competitive program. I just don't think they're one that can become an upper echelon program in the Mountain West. I think there will always be more of a basketball school, and then you can mix in a season or two where you have success. And anybody that does well here, I think is eventually going to be a springboard, like we talked about in the MAC conference, going to other leagues. And I think that's the situation Barry Odom finds himself in. This is a guy that has played at Missouri, was a GA at Missouri, was a coach on their staff, coached at Memphis, and coached at Arkansas, as you alluded to, and the former head coach at the Missouri Tigers. And now he's in a place where he doesn't really have any ties. And so if he does have success here over a couple of seasons, people are going to be like, hey, Right. Listen, he turned around a program that Arroyo took over, the former coach from Bishop Gorman. I forgot his name, Tony Sanchez. And, you know, you look at it, and he's a guy. This would be a springboard to another program. That's all it is. Now, from his perspective, he's like, hey, even if I'm a decent coach and I coach here 10 years, Vegas is a very livable city. You're not in some small podunk town, maybe where some people don't want to be, but this is a major metropolitan international city, really. And so I think from a big picture perspective, Patrick, I don't think this program should have expectations like we talked about with Arizona State, who should be better than they are. I think UNLV would have a hard time. Remember the other thing, yourself, Dustin, myself, all of us are transplants. Majority of the people, it feels like, here are transplants. So to generate the local support also is more difficult.
100%. They've had one winning season since 2000, UNLV. Two winning seasons in conference play since joining the Mountain West in 98. Pay attention, big guy. That ain't great. Amal framed it well. Barry Odom's a good hire. There are no expectations. It's an awesome job. But is it an awesome destination for kids? It's always painted as Vegas. The perception of Vegas is different than the campus. You said it well. It's a commuter school. When we return, win total set at 6, juiced up 180 to the under, so maybe that true number is 5.5. Is UNLV football going over or under? We'll discuss. Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
All right, I don't know about you, but throughout the NFL preseason, the VSIN experts are busy evaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide is due out later this month and will help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with picks from every on-air host. That's all caps, so that includes Amal Shaw and myself. Team-specific preseason analysis. How to bet using the betting splits, which is very important, and football contest strategies. All there. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19. Reserve your copy of the guide or take advantage of our football season special. It's $199 through the Super Bowl. You get everything, including the picks every day. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, we got you back. We got guests coming up. So kind of we're laying it out as far as UNLV. And the total set at 6 for Barry Odom in year one. What's interesting is for like 5 minutes, he had Bobby Petrino about to run his offense, which would have been crazy. And they should have a good offense. We'll get into why. But Bobby Petrino got a call from A&M and he bailed. That's understandable. Also, it's Bobby Petrino. Unsavory. He's not going to stick with his word. But Barry Odom, a good hire. But is UNLV a good program? Now, we were talking a little bit during the break. People say city, they say weather, they say campus, they say facilities. I know nothing about the facilities. You two will fill me in. I've been on the UNLV campus, commuter school. Spread out, no vibe, no center, no I'm in college, nothing you see on television. Television, what you see with Vegas is right over there, over the horizon, and that's the strip. But the kids, they don't have money. They're not going to enjoy the strip. It's just a different vibe. Big guy, we were talking a little bit during the break about comps, where the perception doesn't necessarily equal the reality, and you've got a few.
Yeah, so I think with what's tough, one about the Barry Odom hires, like I do think like he's an adult. He's a guy who can stabilize the program. I don't see him being a long-term solution for sustained success. But when you look at this program, I think you need to be representative of the city. There needs to be some risk, some fun, some kind of shtick to get people here, to get the players to come here, because there's no other reason for them to come here if you're just going to be a regular football program. So, like, go get, like, that high school coach that goes for it on fourth down every time and never punts. Like, something like that.
They tried that with Sanchez. Literally the best high school football coach right down the road at Bishop Gorman, and he was a disaster.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, like, I need more shtick than just he was at a great high school football program. I don't know what it is. The question is, can you win with the leftovers? Because if anyone's any good from Bishop Gorman, USC is coming here. UCLA is coming here. Arizona State, Oregon, all the pack. Even Boise State's going to take them. So can you be good enough with the rest of the programs? That leads me to put them on the same level as, can you be good as a Georgia State? Can you be as good as a UAB? Can you be as good as an FAU, who have to take the best of the rest that's left after the big programs come into their backyard and pluck out the 4 and 5 stars?
Okay. Having said that, it's the Mountain West. The Mountain West just got diluted. I look at the odds right now. They're 18-1. Like, should they be expected to do more? You've got your Boise State. You've got your Fresno States. There is no distinction between Fresno State, which, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not a big latitude and longitude guy. It's in the middle of a cornfield. Like, there's nothing to Fresno State that would indicate it should be a bigger program than UNLV.
No. And they've always had better coaching. Like, you have to get in good coaches that are innovative. I don't know Barry Odom either way. Like, I don't want to be too tough on what happened at Missouri, because Missouri's been mostly irrelevant since Chase Daniel and Jeremy Maclin anyway. But maybe he is a guy who can be innovative, and that gives them a fighting chance here.
You know, certainly defensively, he's going to be better. Go ahead, Amal.
No, you're absolutely right. They'll be much better defensively. But I look at, like, Pat Hill got that program going in the right direction. I think when you look at the San Joaquin Valley there, that's the only program there, right? Like, here in Vegas, there's so many other options. We talked about the school not having much of a campus. I think all those things are a factor. When you look at whether it's Arizona State, Miami, UCLA, these are all, to a certain extent, they do have great campuses, but at the same time, they have a ton of commuters. And if you look at their football programs, yes, Miami's had a great amount of success, but there's so much talent in Dayton, Broward County, that if you literally just put a fence around those two counties, you could win national championships every year. And I think it's tough in cities where you have other options.
Okay, big picture look at UNLV. Let's narrow in on the program this year. I mentioned 6 as far as regular season win total over at DraftKings. Huge juice on the under at -180. Could be headed to 5.5, obviously. I mentioned Bobby Petrino. So that was going to be a big hire, fellas, for Barry Odom. But he got the call from A&M. Here comes Brennan Marion. Who is the OC? He's had 11 gigs in 12 years. I know nothing about the cat. We shall see. I do like the quarterback. You saw him last year, Doug Brumfield. He's the tall lefty, 6'6", from Inglewood, California. I think there's some promise there. Cameron Friel also in the mix. Wide receivers all came from the transfer portal for this year's UNLV team. Aiden Robbins bailed, left for BYU, the running back, but Vincent Davis is in from Pitt. He's good. Courtney Reese, 7 yards per carry. So there's some runners here. A defense, that's Odom's specialty. They should be pretty good this year. Again, Arroyo, they had him improved each of the 3 years. He started off 4-1 last year, then lost 6 of 7. 6 feels lofty. Let's dig into the team this year, Amal.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. This team wasn't great offensively. They've got to get better in that area. Look, they average in the mid-20s in terms of scoring points per game. In college football today, guys, if you're going to be competitive, you've got to be in the 30s. And that's where right now, to me, the key is. Defensively, they weren't anemic, But, you know, still gave up almost 29 points per game. I think we'll see an improvement on that side with Barry Odom. You mentioned Brennan Marion coming in. This guy's been all over the place. But I'll tell you what, Patrick, looking at his bio, what I like and respect is last year was at Texas as a passing game coordinator. He has really worked his way up. High school ranks, collegiate ranks, coached at Howard, among a variety of other places. I think sometimes when you've got that much movement, it may look bad from a resume standpoint, but I think it gives you an opportunity to see different things and what they're able to do. When you look at this team, the one benefit is they do have Doug Brumfield back at quarterback, played 10 games last year, but averaged less than 200 yards passing per game. He's got Ricky White back, who's their leading receiver, but had just over 600 yards receiving. They're not a prolific offensive team. They bring in Vincent Davis, who averaged better than 5 yards per carry at Pittsburgh last year, but again, didn't get a ton of opportunities sitting behind Israel. I forgot his last name now with the Jets, but to me, when I look at this team, the offense, if they can be a little bit more sustaining on drives, I think they've got an opportunity to be better. They were competitive. They need to be able to finish out some games and make some plays late in games. I think they could be a team that could potentially get to a bowl game.
Will they push on the six and go bowling in Odom's first year, big guy?
Man, that is tough. Especially when you have Michigan on the schedule, right? Bryant will be a win in week one. Michigan's obviously a loss. They're not beating Vanderbilt, especially week three, with so many transfers on the defensive side of the ball and trying to get that situated. Then they go to UTEP, which is a really tough game. They're not winning that. They beat Hawaii a year ago, and it's here in Vegas, so they should be favored there because Hawaii stinks off the island. Then they go to Reno. That's always tough. Colorado State's always good. Fresno State is always good. Oh, man, I would lean under here. I do not like the way the schedule plays out for them, especially the early and middle parts of the schedule.
You know, if you're looking at the schedule, Patrick, here's how I would break it down very quickly. I agree with Dustin on Michigan, Vanderbilt. I will throw in Air Force as a loss. You know, the one thing I'm looking for, are you getting 7 victories? I don't see 7 on the calendar for these guys.
It's tough.
What happened with Arroyo? We saw him when he got there. He was all over commercials. He was pimping cars.
And by the way, that was a
guy.
That was a
really good personality.
Thing.
I'm sorry?
That was like a different way of them. Dude, they were like, we're going to get in on the ground on this guy. He's a young up and comer. He's from a big program. Like, let's take the big time. They've tried every other way with coaches. That was like to them, like, we're trying something different. And it bombed.
I think it was a combination of a couple things. He came in from Oregon. They were competitive. And then the wheels fell off last year. You wound up with a new athletic director. Anytime you get a new AD, your most important hire is going to be the football coach. And I think they decided to go in a different direction. And look, nobody's going to care. Even though he started out his first year in the COVID year 0-6, then he goes 2-10, and then 5-7, obviously showing some signs of improvement. But I don't think it came fast enough for the new athletic director, and that's why you saw the change made, 7-23 overall for Marcus Arroyo. And, guys, I got to tell you, Barry Odom has 4 years of experience. Wasn't prolific at Mizzou, but wasn't bad either. I think this is an upgrade compared to where they were with Marcus Arroyo. But at the end of the day, you know, there's certain programs and certain sports you sit there and go, it's just going to be tough to win at. I think UNLV, a phenomenal year is 7-5, and a realistic year is 4-8 or 5-7 for them.
You said you had thoughts on the campus. We got a minute here, big guy. When I go to Summer League and Thomas and Mac, I just look around and I'm like, ugh, like it's just barren and it's not a vibe. Do you have a vibe on the UNLV campus for these kids?
I've only ever been to Thomas and Mac in the Pavilion, and they're fine amenities. Like, it's a very good for a college basketball program, I think. Overall, I think it plays well across the country, but like in terms of campus life, how much of a campus life can you have when you can see from the Thomas and Mack Center the MGM? Like you can see casinos. Like, I don't know. It just, if something feels off about it, there isn't like a fun vibe to me.
Okay. All right. There you go. So we got through UNLV. We've got Georgia Southern and Clay Helton. We've got FAU with Mr. Herman, and we've got Tulsa as well. To get to. As we continue, we've got Ralph Russo joining us next here on Sharp Money. Associated Press, he's a national college football writer, does a great job. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's football season, and bettors know that this is when the money is made. Nobody knows football like VSiN, and now's the time to become a VSiN subscriber and get our comprehensive college and NFL guides. Only VSiN subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats, power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. You can sign up for $199 through the Super Bowl or give it a try for a month for as low as $19. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options. Become part of the Sports Betting Network. Sharp Money, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. Excited to talk to Ralph Russo, Associated Press national college football writer, at Ralph D. Russo AP on Twitter. And thanks, Ralph. Nice to speak with you. This is random, but we're going to start here. I think you're in New York City properly. What is your expectations from afar for UNLV's football program? Barry Odom year one, but just the national perspective on what you expect UNLV to be.
Well, you know, it felt like UNLV was making baby step progress, right, under the last administration, their last regime. And right, when you have a changeover at athletic director, I think having a changeover at coach is not shocking. I think the patience becomes a little thinner when it's not when your boss is not the person who hired you. I think there's always been this feeling that, like, shouldn't UNLV be better at football? But at a certain point, it's been like I'm 53 years old. It's been 35 years of me asking, shouldn't UNLV be better at football? And especially over the last 10 years or so, maybe 15, 20 years, as the football in the state of Nevada gets so much better, right? Like, you see, you know, obviously Bishop Gorman's the one that stands out, but you see these programs pumping out some pretty good players. So why aren't they staying home? Now, I understand you have a new stadium and maybe that takes some time to get some momentum, but I would put it to you this way. I frame it this way. As all this stuff has been going on with the Pac-12 and what's going on with football out West and realignment, the fact that Las Vegas, the university in Las Vegas, hasn't gotten more traction while there's so much spinning around out there, and yet all these conferences are dying to get play their events in Las Vegas, I think has got to be a little disconcerting about, like, why can't they have traction out there? It seems like it should be better, but I'm a little too far away from it to come up with answers as to why. But again, there just seems like the path is there. Better players in state, some good facilities, and a nice big stadium. Like, now's the time to fly, right?
Ralph, I couldn't agree with you more in terms of this is a great opportunity for UNLV. You're a college football AP poll voter. Explain to us how in the preseason you arrive at your rankings and how you kind of stack the 25 teams.
Okay, so unfortunately, I got to correct that. We at the AP, we don't vote.
Okay, sorry.
But we do pick. No problem at all, because it's a common misconception that definitely fills up my Twitter mentions. we don't vote. I don't get a vote. We pick the voters, and we count them up. So, but listen, having done this for almost 20 years, definitely talked to a lot of voters, and what I can tell you is, even when I sort of do my unofficial rankings, right, just off to the side to sort of get an idea of what the season looks like, and see where I agree and disagree with the poll, it's a lot more art than science, right? I mean, you're basically trying to, educated guess your way to these rankings. You're taking a little bit of what you see they have, trying to project maybe what the recruiting rankings say. You sprinkle in some of the computer rankings, that are available publicly, and try to see what they have to say, and maybe you even sort of glance at a schedule and think, okay, where is this team going to be towards the end of the year, and what's the chances of them having a really good year? So I think you throw that all in a pot, and most voters, some voters will throw a little more of one thing than another to get there, but I think you throw all those elements in a pot, and that's how you end up coming up with a ballot.
Ralph Russo, national college football writer, Associated Press. So you said, been doing it 20 plus years. Can you think of a more deserved favorite? Georgia's plus 215 to win a national championship, which is crazy, Ralph, but you think pedigree, they've won it back to back. And then you look at the schedule. Can you think of over the last 20 years of a more deserved champion as far as the preseason at plus 215?
Well, I would say this. you know, there have been some years here where we thought Alabama looked like a pretty heavy favorite, especially I can think back to one of the, you know, a couple of years that they're coming off of championships and have returning quarterbacks. That Ohio State team in 2015, I'd be interested to see what their odds were, you know, coming off of the 2014 championship and bringing back Zeke and Bosa and a pretty loaded team that ended up producing, I think, like 13 or 14 NFL draft picks. But I think what obviously what makes Georgia unique is, right, they're three in a row or going for three championships in a row. They have been recruiting. I think this is a key, though. They've been recruiting at such a high level that they kind of get the Alabama treatment now, and maybe you could even say they've surpassed Alabama, in that when you are simply bringing in the number one or two recruiting class every year, you just always are going to have another guy. There's just always going to be another player, another future NFL draft pick to replace the ones you miss. And that's where I think then you throw in that schedule, and I think that's where the voters and the odds are coming from. It's a really loaded team because you know they've been recruiting at a ridiculously high level. And then you look at like the 1 through 12 on the schedule and you think, who can beat these guys?
Ralph, when you look at the SEC West, who's the greatest threat to Georgia?
I am going to stick with Alabama. It's hard to say Alabama is getting slighted because to be number 4 doesn't seem like much of a slight. But, you know, 4 is the lowest ranking Alabama's had since 2009 when it started number 5. That was 3 years into Saban's tenure. Oh, by the way, that year they won the national championship. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. I still think Alabama has the depth and preponderance of talent, and not to mention Nick Saban and coaching there, that's the team I would want to have stack up against Georgia. I understand all the LSU love. I understand that LSU has some prime players at prime positions on both lines. But I wonder if the depth and development of talent at LSU in only year 2 under Brian Kelly is maybe being overrated just a little bit. I think because they beat Alabama last year, we seem to have advanced their timetable, sped up the clock on them. And I'm just wondering if maybe they're not the complete product yet at LSU.
Ralph, let's go to the Pac-12 while we still can. USC 16-1 to win a national championship. Lincoln Riley year 2. Caleb Williams, we know. Will they get enough out of that defense to contend?
So I still have my questions about USC. And if somebody came to me and said, okay, here are the top 10 teams, we'll pick one that washes out this year. And washes out is a bit of a strong term, but if you look at the top 10 teams, it's hard to pick a team that's going to wash out. That's why they're top 10 teams. But if I was forced, I would say I think the team that is most likely to have a hard time reaching expectations is USC. I understand what they did in the portal. They brought a lot of interesting talent in on defense, and Caleb Williams is wonderful. He is just fabulous. So the offense is going to score. I think the combination of the turnover margin from last year, I don't know if the turnover fairy shows up 2 years in a row at plus 21 turnover margin. Right. I still want to make sure that even though they have new players, that those new players have a sound defense and they tackle. I want to see that happen. So those two things lead me to think some regression might be involved with USC, that they wouldn't necessarily be bad, but that there is maybe not the very most solid foundation to build on for a number 6 team in the country and a favorite in the Pac-12.
Ralph, we got about 30 seconds. Who wins the ACC?
I am going to go with Clemson, which I know is a little bit of a pivot because Florida State's getting a lot of love these days. And you guys can come back to me and tell me that I'm wrong or that I changed my mind because I still haven't put this down in print. Until I put it down in print, I'm not locked to it. But as of right now, I think I might go with Clemson. Yeah, I think as of right now, I might go with Clemson. I think that, I think the new addition of Garrett Riley boosts that offense to where it hasn't been the last couple of years.
And Ralph, great questions earlier when you brought up 2015 Ohio State and 2018 Alabama. Preseason, Ohio State in 2015 to win a national championship, plus 250. Alabama in 18, plus 250. This year, Georgia, plus 215, so even shorter. Ralph Russo, great job, man. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. You brought up those two teams. We should have a discussion about that because those two teams were loaded as well, and he shortened up the number to 215 over at DraftKings on Georgia. Coming up next, Jason Moore, the Fantasy Footballers Podcast, joins.